The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
Susan Keogh filling in for Matt Cooper on The Last Word. Now, many of us are feeling the effects of overindulging on our favourite foods over the Christmas period today. I know my jeans are definitely feeling a little bit tighter, but it's definitely a time where we all tend to overdo it in terms of what we eat. But imagine if you couldn't eat 85 to 95% of the food that surrounds us. Well, that's the case for brothers Mark and Peter Lavery from Dublin, who suffer from a disease called PKU. And they're with me now in studio to raise awareness about this disease. So Mark and Peter, thanks so much for coming in to talk to us on The Last Word.
Thanks for having us in.
Okay, so Mark, let's start with you. Tell us a little bit about this condition, PKU.
Okay, so it's PKU, and it's basically a disorder, meaning that our bodies don't have the enzyme to break down one amino acid. So as you know, protein is made up of amino acids, and there's a lot of kind of natural protein in foods. So this means that because we can't break it down, we basically have to adhere to a very strict low protein diet. So it basically means no meat, fish, eggs, milk, bread, nuts, seeds, some vegetables now as well. We just found out that avocado has 2 grams of protein, which people will be delighted to hear, but for us, we weren't.
And I suppose, Peter, you take me back a little bit. Tell me when your parents, I suppose, became aware that you had this. When I saw this PKU written today, I do remember it rang some bells with me. Is this the thing that is diagnosed by the heel prick test that babies get in hospital?
Yes, exactly that, Susan. So every baby is tested straight away from birth with the heel prick test. And it's known within a few days, basically, if a child has been born with PKU. In my case, I had Mark ahead of me. So Mark had gone through getting the heel prick test and being diagnosed from birth. So for me personally, it was no surprise, really. We have a sister in between us who does not have PKU, which is an interesting thing that it went from Mark being diagnosed with PKU, and then our sister Joanne wasn't diagnosed, and then it went down to me being diagnosed as well. So in the case of, you know, I've heard stories from Mark telling us about how, you know, my parents kind of found out and they were shocked at the very start. But for me, it was, they knew exactly what to expect.
I'm sure your parents were really shocked, because I actually remember when my daughter had that test and they tell you, oh, this is just something we're doing, but, you know, it'll be negative, you know, as in it's almost like a thing that they do, but they don't expect there to be a positive result. So I'm sure your parents were really shocked when they were told that it was positive.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was kind of day 5. The results came back after I was born. Our mum, we're very fortunate, our mum is a doctor, so she kind of, she knew about it, but I mean, like you said, would never have expected it. I mean, it is so rare.
Yeah, how rare is it then?
So in Ireland, I think it's 1,500 babies are diagnosed every year.
Okay.
And so,
and there's no cure for it, you just live with it?
No, not at the moment. There is treatment available. Like we said, it's kind of treated by a diet, but there's also medication available, which unfortunately we don't have access to in Ireland.
Okay.
It's available in 23 other European countries, but not in Ireland.
And this is part of your campaign and why you want to raise awareness about this condition?
Kind of, because I guess when I was born in 91, and that was kind of the heyday for Ireland. Ireland was kind of seen as one of the best countries in the world to have PKU. And in the, 26 years, it's kind of gone, not the worst country, but it's not in line with other European countries. Like from the 60s onwards, Ireland was one of the first countries to bring in genetic screening. So to bring in the heel prick test and making it mandatory to look for PKU. But for now, I mean, the range of foods is, it's quite small. Our low protein foods is quite small. And the treatment that is available out there, Kuvan, is kind of seen to be, it needs to be treated with the diet.
And is that a tablet then that's available in other countries?
Yeah, so it's a form of tablets that we would take. We also take a protein supplement to get our other amino acids.
Okay.
Because we have a low protein diet, obviously we need protein, you know, otherwise we'd fall apart. So we actually take a protein supplement, which is it's 75 tablets every single day, which they're pretty big tablets. So that's how we get our kind of natural form of protein.
So Peter, tell me what you've eaten today then. Give me an example of a normal day, say, compared to what, you know, I might eat. What's on the menu?
Okay, so today, for example, I mean, usually I'd have more or less the same thing every day in that, you know, I'd be up and myself and Mark would be have pre-made our own special bread from the night before. So we use a bread maker with our own flour because we can't have regular flour. So we use a special low-protein adapted flour. We make that every night. One of us do it. And the next morning it's sitting in the bread maker ready. So it's straight and it's cut ourselves. And then we do kind of today, I think I had a toast with a kind of a tomato paste with avocado on top. And as Mark said earlier, you know, avocado now is seen to have protein in it. So it's like we can't even escape it in the vegetables now. But it's interesting that that all these things kind of pop up, and same with kind of mushrooms and stuff like that. But yeah, so then for my lunch, I had a kind of a rocket salad with kind of broccolis on top, kind of steamed broccoli with soy sauce and sesame stuff. So it's very fruit and vegetable heavy, our diets, because we lack the ability to have the
protein,
the staple stuff of the you know, regular breads and regular pastas, you know.
And when it comes to things like desserts then and sweet treats and stuff, like what can you have out of that?
It would kind of be, desserts are kind of the one we kind of fall on most. So we kind of like fruit salads. Meringue has obviously a bit of egg in it, so
yeah,
it needs to be counted. We can have a very small amount of protein a day. Like, I'm on 6 grams of protein a day to get the natural.
Mm.
It's phenylalanine, which is the amino acid we can't have, but we need some of it.
Okay.
So I'm on 6 grams, Peter's on 5 grams. So we kind of allocate that out during the day. Like, potato has protein in it, so that needs to be counted. We basically count pretty much everything that we eat.
And so what about Christmas dinner then, Mark? What was that like?
We had a good Christmas this year. Yeah, it was, we had courgette, kind of roasted courgette. A lot of roast potatoes, a stuffed pepper with our own kind of stuffing, like a low protein stuffing.
And is it impossible to go out for dinner then? Or like, because it sounds like a lot of prep goes into this.
I think it's gotten easier as we've gotten older, and kind of we're more confident in going to places and saying what we need. Like I would have thought kind of pizza places would be totally off limits, but we have our own pizza base.
Okay.
So I've gone in, and Peter has as well. We've gone in with our own bases, and they're kind of like, this is really weird, but we say that we're not fussy eaters or anything. We actually have to have a low protein base. And it's gotten easier with like the gluten-free movement and vegan movements that it's kind of more acceptable now.
And would you feel very sick? Like, what would be the effect on you if you didn't follow this restricted diet?
Okay, so there's sort of short-term and then more long-term effects, really. I think short-term, within the 24 hours after you've kind of had, you know, as Mark said, we have an allocation of how much natural protein we have. So I'm on 5 grams protein. If I've gone over that, you can tell within 24 hours that something's not quite right. You know, it's brain fogginess. It's you know, you can't concentrate properly. You know, you feel kind of in a bit of a mood. You know, it's all... It's very hard to describe unless you've kind of experienced it. It just feels like your brain is, because essentially it's toxins that you're pumping into your body. So you feel cloudy. And then the more long-term effects would be, you know, from birth, if you weren't diagnosed, which thankfully we were, you'd be looking at, you know, kind of not being able to look after yourself fully. You know, you'd be going into intellectual disabilities. You know, you wouldn't be born like that, because
okay,
you're born,
but that would be
same.
The effect.
You'd roll into it from later on, late teens to early 20s. You start to develop problems where you couldn't walk or speak or essentially live for yourself.
And is there any support group? Or I know you have each other, obviously, but mm-hmm. is there a group of other people who suffer from PKU that you know, share recipes or share advice or, you know, kind of talk to about it?
Yeah, there's a PKU Association of Ireland that are doing great work now and kind of raising awareness. And there are kind of PKU groups, Facebook groups and stuff like that. I was in New York last year, and I actually got in touch with kind of the PKU community out there, and they were so generous in giving me kind of low protein foods that they had to spare, because obviously I can't bring that much in my luggage. So there is, like, it's been good, and we've kind of, like, there's been a push on PKU lately, and the more stuff we've done, we've been getting kind of messages through Instagram and Facebook and stuff like that, and it's really nice to hear that there is kind of a community out there and awareness has been raised.
And your sister doesn't have it, so it's like, is it genetic?
Yeah, so it is. It's genetic. It comes from two parents have to be carriers, essentially, and they have to come together. And in order to be born with PKU, you have to have carriers on carriers. And then it just comes down to a lotto thing from there, really, you know, and that's how, you know, we got it. And then our sister didn't.
Mm. And in terms, just to go back to what you were saying there, Mark, about when you're in restaurants and stuff, like, because, you know, I do imagine people, you know, there's a lot of talk these days about people who are gluten intolerant and, mm-hmm. you know, celiac, and then people who think they might be celiac, but they're not celiac, and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Is it hard sometimes to stress, I suppose, the seriousness of this compared to somebody who maybe just, you know, doesn't want to have gluten or wants to follow a vegan diet?
Kind of, yeah, it depends on sort of the resistance you're getting.
Yeah,
if they,
yeah.
You know, if they're like, I mean, we went to France, and they're big into their food, and they would be kind of a little hesitant to, you know, offer a dish without cheese and stuff
like that.
Yeah. So you did kind of have to push it then. But I think generally people are really good. My ex-girlfriend was actually celiac as well, so you can imagine we were like the nightmare table in the restaurant for the waiters.
They're like, these two better leave a massive tip.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to leave it there. We wish you the best of luck with everything. And is there anywhere that people can get in contact with you then, on Instagram or Facebook, if they're looking to find out some more detail or anything?
Yeah, so of course, both of us are on Facebook. You can message us on Facebook. My name's Peter Lavery, and then he's Mark Lavery as well. And then Instagram, likewise, as well. You know,
okay, and we'll put all that up on our Twitter account as well. That was Mark and Peter Lavery from Dublin telling us about their PKU disease.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.